Welcome to December 5th, 2023's study of the article, Crucible of Credible Creed, and also the scriptures that we have from 2 Samuel, Jeremiah, and Matthew, respectively, for today. The time is 19:28 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. I'm glad to be with you. And I'm happy to see you again. I hope you're doing well. And I just became aware yesterday after I did my video, I wasn't looking at the camera enough at the beginning, especially to welcome people. So welcome once again. And in our article, let's begin, because we do have a long account of a reading in Matthew, from Matthew 13 today. Now, from the Crucible article, Chapter 1, paragraph 5, the Bible is more than an intended account of history. It is precisely because of its more spiritual aspects and even its own claims to have been inspired by God that the Bible has endured a most intense scrutiny over the years. For the same reason, has an accurate Bible chronology been seen for some time as the Holy Grail by researchers into the civilization of man's history and Adam's creation? These researchers are known as a group generally as biblical archaeologists. These archaeologists draw conclusions based on field study. We know that archaeologists dig in the ground, most of them anyway. Field study of proposed biblical sites, testing the Bible's soundness. If the facts don't seem to fit, they may reject the Bible. That's happened, in fact, with Catherine Kenyon. Because of her research at Jericho, she decided that the Bible must be wrong. Likewise, Bible believers, now we don't have to agree with Dame Catherine Kenyon. Likewise, Bible believers may reject archaeological finds. And the fact that the way that she investigated Jericho, we can, and other people have also done so, question those methods that were used. Scientists who defer to radiocarbon dating results in some instances are continually advocating revising all of known history, while archaeologists point out the other side, in that the work done by hundreds of archaeologists over many decades makes it clear how radiocarbon dates are in error. And this is an actual reality in archaeological circles, that particularly, for example, with Egypt, the radiocarbon dates of Egypt have been prompting people to say that the chronology that's been accepted for so many years has been in error. Whereas, on the other hand, the archaeologists have done so much work, and with good reason, they believe that the chronology for Egypt is correct. But, of course, we don't have any chronology that's consistent from the Egyptian archaeologists. It's not a complete, exact, consistent chronology of Egypt. But we're talking about, you know, decades of variance between the different opinions. But these other people who are saying it should be changed are saying it's 100 years wrong or something, or maybe more than 100 years. But the disagreement between the archaeologists might be generally less than, you know, less than a decade or less than a few decades. Certainly quite a bit less than 100 years. But when you have enough information about the correlations between the pottery and all the different layers that have been dug up in Egypt, you get a pretty strong sense of what the chronology is, and it's difficult to overturn that using radiocarbon dates. That's what's been shown, and I've talked about that. I've written about that in, probably in more than one article, but it may be something in Trojan War, too. That there may be something in the article Trojan War. I'm trying to think where the article was where I really talked about that in detail. It might not have been Trojan War, but I'm thinking it might have been Trojan War. But we'll find out. All these things we'll find out when we read these articles again, and I'll be looking as soon as I mention it. Now that I've mentioned it, I'll be researching to find it. And Ecclesiastes for today, once again, it's Ecclesiastes, our scripture. This time it's verse 10, little children, for the proverb for today. And it says there, all that your hand finds to do, do with your very power. For there's no work, nor devising, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in Sheol, the place to which you are going. Sheol is, of course, the Hebrew word for the grave, which has also got the translation of hell in English. So the word hell in Hebrew really means the grave, the Sheol, the word Sheol. Just called Sheol. It's not called the anything. It's just called Sheol, which is their word for hell or the grave. But the hell that's been taught by many of the proponents of Christianity within Christendom has been a different hell, a hell that's always been associated with hellfire. Whereas the grave is not like that. Hell is not like that. Hell is like when you go there, everything stops. Your life is over. That's what hell is, according to the Bible. And there's the proof, Ecclesiastes 9 and 10. 2 Samuel 4. When the son of Saul, this is a short chapter, I believe, and Jeremiah is a short chapter, I believe. Well, this is a very short chapter. When the son of Saul heard that Abner had died in Hebron, then his hands became feeble. That's Ishbosheth. He's the only remaining son of Saul at this point. And all the Israelites themselves were disturbed. Abner was killed. And we read about that in chapter 3 of 2 Samuel, and there were two men, chiefs of the marauding bands that happened to belong to the son of Saul, the name of the one being Baana, and the name of the other being Rechab, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, of the sons of Benjamin, for Beeroth, too, used to be counted as part of Benjamin, and the Beerothites went running away to Gittim. And they came to be alien residents there down to this day. Now, Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son lame in the feet. 5 years old he happened to be when the report about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. 5 years old. And his nurse began to carry him and flee. But it came about that as she was running in panic to flee, he then had a fall and was lamed. And his name was Mephibosheth. And the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, Rechab, and Baana proceeded to go and come to the house of Ishbosheth about when the day had heated up, as he was taking his noonday siesta. And here they came into the middle of the house as men fetching wheat, and then struck him in the abdomen. And Rechab and Baana, his brother themselves, escaped detection. When they went into the house, he was lying upon his couch in his inner bedroom. And then they struck him so that they put him to death, after which they removed his head and took his head and walked on the road to the Arabah all night long. Eventually, they came bringing the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron and said to the king, "Here's the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who looked for your soul. But Jehovah gives to my lord the king revenge this day upon Saul and his offspring." The Arabah is the valley through which in which the Salt Sea lies, and also the Jordan River. And it's also the Sea of Galilee, too. However, David answered Rechab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, and said to them, "As Jehovah, who redeemed my soul out of all distress, is living, when there was one reporting to me saying, 'Here Saul is dead,' and he himself in his own eyes became like a bringer of good news, I, however, took hold of him and killed him in Ziklag when it was due for me to give him the messenger's fee. How much more so when wicked men themselves have killed a righteous man in his own house upon his bed? And now, should I not require his blood from your hands, and must I not clear you out of the earth?" With that, David commanded the young men, and they killed them, and cut off their hands and their feet, and hanged them by the pool in Hebron, and the head of Ishbosheth they took, and then buried in the burial place of Abner in Hebron. That's the end of 2 Samuel chapter 4. That was very short, wasn't it? 12 verses only. And now Jeremiah chapter 39. I mentioned that we were going to talk about the siege upon Jerusalem in the ninth year of Zedekiah, the king of Judah, in the 10th month. Right, well, that means sometime around January. And that the ninth year, January, would be 588 BCE. Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, and all his military force came to Jerusalem and began to lay siege to it. In the 11th year of Zedekiah, which is later, right? This is because it was 588, right? The ninth year prior to Nisan, that would be January is prior to Nisan 1. So the ninth year was in 588, but because it was in January. But the 11th year, the fourth month, in verse 2, that's in the next year, 587, because that would cross into the 10th year after Nisan of 588, and then it would begin to be the 11th year after Nisan of 587 BCE. On the ninth day of the month, the city was broken through, and all the princes of the king of Babylon proceeded to come in and sit down in the middle gate, namely Nergal Sharezer, Samgarnebo, Sarsakim, Rabsaris, and Nergal Sharezer the Rabmag, and all the rest of the princes of the king of Babylon. We look at the footnote here. The Rabmag is the chief magician. Something like that. Now it came about that as soon as Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and all the men of war saw them. This is when they had broken through and entered the city. In the 11th year of Zedekiah, verse 2, in the fourth month, on the ninth day of the month. Now that's the fourth, right, day of the month. It was in the fifth month that the city was burnt, by the way. But by the gate, now, I need to read all of verse 4. Now it came about that as soon as Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and all the men of war saw them, they began to run away and to go out by night from the city by the way of the garden of the king, by the gate between the double wall, and they kept going out by the way of the Arabah, which is the valley of the Salt Sea and the Jordan River, or the desert plain, it says here. Oh, so it's the desert plain, it also means the Arabah. Oh, that's a more appropriate meaning for how they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David, not by way of the Jordan River Valley, likely, but maybe just the desert plain. Makes more sense. And a military force of the Chaldeans went chasing after them, and they got to overtake Zedekiah in the desert plains of Jericho. Then they took him and brought him up to Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might pronounce upon him judicial decisions. And the king of Babylon proceeded to slaughter the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes. Slaughtered his sons, and all the nobles of Judah, the king of Babylon, slaughtered. And the eyes of Zedekiah he blinded, after which he bound him with copper fetters in order to bring him to Babylon as a blind man. And the house of the king and the houses of the people, the Chaldeans, burned with fire. And the walls of Jerusalem they pulled down, and the rest of the people who were left remaining in the city, and the deserters that had fallen away to him, and the rest of the people who were left remaining, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, took into exile to Babylon. And some of the people, the lowly ones who had nothing at all, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, let remain in the land of Judah, and he went on to give them vineyards and compulsory services on that day. Furthermore, Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, gave commands concerning Jeremiah by means of Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, saying, "Take him and keep your own eyes set upon him, and do not do to him anything bad at all, but just as he may speak to you, so do to him." I'm very on the verge of sleep because I'm changing over from working at night to working during the daytime. I'm trying to anyway, and I haven't been able to sleep in the normal nighttime hours yet, so I'm still very sleep deprived right now. So that may be causing me, I know it's causing me to slur my speech somewhat. I'm apologizing because it doesn't mean that I'm in any other problem. It's just this sleep deprivation, I believe, is all it is. So nothing else. Take him and keep your eyes set upon him. The king of Babylon instructed his people regarding Jeremiah. Accordingly, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, and Nebushazban, the Rabsaris, and Nergal-Sharezer, the Rabmag, and all the principal men of the king of Babylon sent. They even proceeded to send and take Jeremiah out of the courtyard of the guard and give him over to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, in order to bring him forth to his house that he might dwell in the midst of the people. And to Jeremiah the word of Jehovah occurred while he happened to be shut up in the courtyard of the guard. To me, my own voice sounds like it's very monotone when I'm sleep deprived. Right now, I don't sound like my voice has any good quality at all. And to Jeremiah the word of Jehovah occurred when he happened to be shut up in the courtyard of the guard, saying, "Go, and you must say to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, this is what Jehovah of armies, the God of Israel, has said, here I am bringing true my words upon this city for calamity and not for good, and they will certainly happen before you in that day. And I will deliver you in that day, is the utterance of Jehovah, and you will not be given into the hand of the men of whom you yourself are scared. For I shall without fail furnish you an escape, and by the sword you will not fall, and you will certainly come to have your soul as a spoil, because you have trusted in me, is the utterance of Jehovah." And that's the end of Jeremiah chapter 39. Well, we seem to be ahead of schedule for once. Matthew chapter 13. On that day, Jesus, having left the house, was sitting by the sea, and great crowds gathered to him, so that he went aboard a boat and sat down, and all the crowd was standing on the beach. Then he told them many things by illustration, saying, "Look, a sower went out to sow, and as he was sowing, some seeds fell alongside the road, and the birds came and ate them up. Others fell upon the rocky places, where they did not have much soil, and at once they sprang up because of not having depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and because of not having root, they withered. Others, too, fell upon the thorns, among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked them. Still others, fell upon the fine soil, and they began to yield fruit. This one, 100-fold. That one, 60. The other, 30. Let him that has ears listen. So the disciples came up and said to him, Why is it you speak to them by the use of illustrations? In reply, he said, To you it is granted to understand the sacred secrets of the kingdom of the heavens. But to these people it is not granted. For whoever has, more will be given him, and he will be made to abound. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. This is why I speak to them by the use of illustrations, because looking they look in vain, and hearing they hear in vain, neither do they get the sense of it, and toward them the prophecy of Isaiah is having fulfillment, which says, By hearing you will hear, but by no means get the sense of it, and looking you will look, but by no means see. For the heart of this people has grown unreceptive, and with their ears they have heard without response, and they have shut their eyes, that they might never see with their eyes and hear with their ears and get the sense of it with their hearts and turn back, and I heal them. That's the end of the prophecy of Isaiah. However, Jesus went on, Happy are your eyes because they behold, and your ears because they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous men desired to see the things you are beholding and did not see them, and to hear the things you are hearing and did not hear them. You then, listen to the illustration of the man that sowed. Where anyone hears the word of the kingdom but does not get the sense of it, the wicked one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is the one sown alongside the road. As for the one sown upon the rocky places, this is the one hearing the word and at once accepting it with joy, yet he has no root in himself, but continues for a time. And after tribulation or persecution has arisen on account of the word, he is at once stumbled. As for the one sown among the thorns, this is the one hearing the word, but the anxiety of this system of things and the deceptive power of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. As for the one sown upon the fine soil, this is the one hearing the word and gets the sense of it, who really does bear fruit and produces. This one 100-fold, that one 60, the other 30. Another illustration he set before them, saying, The kingdom of the heavens has become like a man that sowed fine seed in his field. While men were sleeping, his enemy came and oversowed weeds in among the wheat and left. When the blade sprouted and produced fruit, then the weeds appeared also. So the slaves of the householder came up and said to him, Master, did you not sow fine seed in your field? How then does it come to have weeds? He said to them, An enemy, a man, did this. They said to him, Do you want us then to go out and collect them? He said, No, that by no chance, while collecting the weeds, you uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and in the harvest season I will tell the reapers, First collect the weeds and bind them in bundles to burn them up, then go to gathering the wheat into my storehouse. Another illustration he set before them, saying, The kingdom of the heavens is like a mustard grain, which a man took and planted in his field, which is, in fact, the tiniest of all the seeds. But when it has grown, it is the largest of the vegetables and becomes a tree, so that the birds of heaven come and find lodging among its branches. Another illustration he spoke to them, The kingdom of the heavens is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 large measures of flour until the whole mass was fermented. All these things Jesus spoke to the crowds by illustrations. Indeed, without an illustration, he would not speak to them, that there might be fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet who said, I will open my mouth with illustrations. I will publish things hidden since the founding. That's from Psalm 78, verse 2. And then, after dismissing the crowds, he went into the house, and his disciples came to him and said, Explain to us the illustration of the weeds in the field. In response, he said, the sower of the fine seed is the Son of Man. In other words, Jesus. The field is the world. As for the fine seed, these are the sons of the kingdom, but the weeds are the sons of the wicked one. And the enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is a conclusion of a system of things, and the reapers are angels. Therefore, just as the weeds are collected and burned with fire, so it will be in the conclusion of the system of things. The Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will collect out from his kingdom all things that cause stumbling and persons who are doing lawlessness. In other words, the false Christians, the ones who are the weeds, the part of Christendom that's teaching false teachings and, you know, doing things that are against what Jesus taught and against what the Bible teaches. And they will pitch them into the fiery furnace. There is where their weeping and the gnashing of their teeth will be. At that time, the righteous ones will shine as brightly as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let him that has ears listen. And Jesus went on, the kingdom of the heavens is like a treasure hidden in the field, which a man found and hid. And for the joy he has, he goes and sells what things he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of the heavens is like a traveling merchant seeking fine pearls. Upon finding one pearl of high value, away he went and promptly sold all the things he had and bought it. Again, the kingdom of the heavens is like a dragnet let down into the sea and gathering up fish of every kind. When it got full, they hauled it up onto the beach, and sitting down, they collected the fine ones into vessels, but the unsuitable they threw away. That is how it will be in the conclusion of the system of things. The angels will go out and separate the wicked from among the righteous and will cast them into the fiery furnace. There is where their weeping and the gnashing of their teeth will be. Did you get the sense of all these things? They said to him, yes. Then he said to them, that being the case, every public instructor, when taught respecting the kingdom of the heavens, is like a man, a householder who brings out of his treasure store things new and old. Now when Jesus had finished these illustrations, he went across country from there. And after coming into his home territory, he began to teach them in their synagogue, so that they were astounded and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these powerful works? Is this not the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And his sisters, are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all these things? So they began to stumble at him. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not unhonored except in his home territory and in his own house. And he did not do many powerful works there on account of their lack of faith. So he didn't get any honor in his home territory. That's the end of Matthew chapter 13. So even the great, great, great Messiah, he was the Messiah. He didn't get any honor in his home territory, despite the fact that he was doing miracles, healing miracles, many, many kinds of healings of people and teaching all this wisdom to people. Didn't give him any honor in his home territory. Fascinating. And it's important to realize it, because if it's true for the Messiah, how much more would it be true for anybody else, that they wouldn't be honored either in their home territory? So we're now, well, we have a couple of minutes, you know, 3 minutes and some seconds. That was longer, you see, in the book of Matthew than it was in the other books, and we really needed the extra time. But now let's see what else we can talk about. Well, I think I should talk about some of the things I'm doing with regard to my nutrition recently, I've been taking, well, I'm taking vitamin B12. I take glutathione together with vitamin E in the, it's the alpha form of vitamin E. D-alpha form, is it called, I think? But I'll have to look that up. I'm taking the vitamin K2 again and with vitamin D. I've reversed my arthritis using the MK7 form of vitamin K2. It's completely reversed and the pain is gone again. So, but it was a big bump and very painful. It's gradually been reversed over a period of weeks, but it's fairly quick. But when you have a big bump caused by arthritis, it's not going to be instantaneously evaporated when you take MK7, the form of vitamin K2. You have to take that with some kind of fat, and it usually comes in a fat base, and you take it with vitamin D. So I'm taking those, both MK7 and MK4, you have to take with vitamin D, and they need fat as well. It's a fat soluble vitamin, vitamin K2. I also take a multivitamin made by Thorne, and I take cod liver oil and 369 omega, part of which comes from fish oil, but there's borage and flaxseed also from which the omegas are derived for the 369 omegas. And so I've got the cod liver oil, the omegas, and the krill oil. I take krill oil too, and I've been increasing the amount of krill I'm taking. I'm doubling the amount of krill oil I'm taking, but I wasn't taking any more than 1/3 of what was recommended, so I bumped that up. And iodine, I take iodine, B12. I mentioned that probably, but iodine, I try to take that every day as a supplement too. And I'm just going by my memory. Oh yeah, selenium and boron, I take those individually as well as supplements. That's almost everything. I take freeminos, which is amino acids, as a supplement. And I'm taking the DLPA now as a painkiller for the chronic pain that I suffer in some of my things I have chronic pain with. So the DLPAs, I take one of those, maybe not even one per day. But that's an amino acid painkiller. It's very, very healthy or safe, remarkably, relatively safe and cheap. Nothing like morphine as a painkiller, but it's more effective than morphine. People definitely have said, and this is a fact apparently, DLPA as a painkiller. Phenylalanine is what the PA stands for, and the other D and L are two different amino acid types. So that's all for today. It's December 5th, 2023. I'm happy we got that done in my sleep-deprived state, December 5th, 2023, 2001 hours Eastern Standard Time, 2001 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And this is Crow on my behalf, and also Cassie, my two watches, saying bye for now.